Okay, good morning, everybody. Okay, today we are continuing a new packet, actually. I think we've done the... One second, I have to let someone in. We're continuing in the new packet. Okay. And this is Hezmani Nidus Vizivus. Okay. So till now we've been doing the concept of Hargasha and all the different shitas. I think we've, I'm sure there's still always more to say, but I think we've exhausted it too, for the time being. Okay, so now we go into a different inyan. The Torah tells us in Parshas Metzora, Isha ki siyezova dam yezova besar shivas yomim tiye medidasa. So this is talking about the Did of Nida. Even though it uses the word Zava, Zava just means a flow. So if a woman has a dam that comes out of her from the Makor, so she's tummy for 7 days. Tummy for 7 days. And that's it. So she bleeds 1 day, she has to wait 6 more days. 2 days, she bleeds 5 more days. The whole composite is a 7 day thing. And after 7 days, she goes to the mikveh. So this is the din d'oraisa. Now, today, a woman is a nida if she has to wait 12 days today. Right? That's much more than the Torah required. Torah required 7 days. And not only the Torah required 7 days, but part of the 7 days that she's seeing the dam is part of the 7 days. It doesn't have to be Zayin Nikiyim. So because she can bleed for 5 days and see, just has to wait 2 more days and she goes to the mikveh. If she sees 6 days, she waits 1 more day and go to the mikveh. The whole thing is a 7 day thing. And in Halacha today, it became a whole thing of 12 days, minimum. Now, the difference between 7 and 12 could be the difference between having a child and not having a child. Because if the woman ovulates and then, before she gets to go to the mikveh, then the time she gets home, gets to the mikveh, she already will be past the time. So that's the big question of how to deal with situations where a woman is ovulating before, she gets back. She gets to go to the mikveh. So when it was as far as the Torah is concerned, the din d'oraisa is only 7 days. So then she gets back from the mikveh after 7 days, and then she'll be fine probably. But today it could be more common because. So how does it come that we changed it from 7 to 12? Svarnim 7 to 11. But so that's going to take us many many shiurim to understand that. But the basic thing is that Anita only needs 7 days. They don't even have to be 7 clean days. She can bleed 3 days, and then she just has to wait 4 more days, and then goes to the mikveh. But then there's a din of zava. That's on the next page here, on page 2. V'isha ki yozov zav dome yomim rabim below es nidosa. There's the way the halacha is, and before that in pasuk chavdalet it says yishkav yishosov nidosa olov to v'tomi shivas yomim. Right? That's the din nida. But the way it has is when the woman gets her period, that's the beginning of the nida cycle. So that's a midaraisa, that's a 7-day thing. Then the next 11 days following the 7 days is the Yemei Ziva. So if she bleeds for 3 days during that 11-day period, then she's called a Zava Gedola, and then she needs Zayin Nikim, not just 7 days, Zayin Nikim. So then it's going to be, so any time during that, those 11 days, in other words, the first 7 days that from when she got her period, those are the first 7 days. Those are the Nida days. And after the 7 days, if she stopped bleeding, then she goes to the mikvah. Then after those 7 days, there's an 11-day period. And the 11-day period is what? Is the potential time where she can become a Zava. If she'll see in those 11 days for 3 days in a row, she'll become a Zava Gedol and she has a Zayin Nikiyim. And if she only sees 1 or 2 days in those 11 days, then she's a Zava Ketana, or also called a Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. Then she has to have 1 day Betara. And even that 1 day mixes Yom Kikulo, and then she does a Bedika and she goes to the mikvah. But if she sees 3 days during that 11-day period, the 11-day period is, again, is the 11 days right after the first 7 days. The first 7 days start when she gets her period. That's the first 7 days. Midaraisa. And then there's an 11-day period. 11-day period is a potential period that if she bleeds in those 11 days for 3 days in a row, she needs Zayin Nikiyim in the mikvah. If she only sees for 2 days or 1 day, then she also has to keep 1 more day Betara, even a mikzah Sayom Kukulo, and then she could go to the mikvah as well. So today, we treat all the women today as Suffolk Zavas. In other words, a woman today, when she gets a period, she's not a Zava, she's a Nida. So she doesn't need Zayin Nikiyim. So why does she need? So why do we make her do Zayin Nikiyim? The answer is, we make her do Zayin Nikiyim because we're afraid that, you know, when you're dealing with these things, people can make mistakes. They don't realize that they're in the 7 days, they're in the 11 days. So we just said every woman has to assume that to treat her like Ke'ilu, they're in the 11-day period, even though they're not. They're clearly in the 7-day period. So as soon as you get your period, that's the kickoff. That's that's the 7 days. In the 11-day period, then that's when, if she bleeds for 3 days, she has to have Zayin Nikiyim. So even though a woman today, when she gets a period, she's not in the 11-day period, she's in the 7-day period, we still treat her ke'ilu she's in the 11-day period. We're afraid people will mix things up, and we always require so that if she'll bleed 3 days of Nida, we'll view that as Zava, and then we'll require to have Zayin Nikiyim. And we won't count the 3 days that she bled, or the 4 days that she bled, or the 5 days she bled, part of the Zayin Nikiyim, because it wasn't Naki. Naki means there's no bleeding. So that's how it goes. So that's what the Pasuk says on page 2, Pasuk Chavches, Im Tara Mizova, V'Safra La Shivas Yomim, V'Achar Titar. Then she has to count 7 days. That's the 7 clean days, Zayin Nikiyim and Achar Titar. But that's by a Zava. But we treat all Nidas Ke'ilu as Zavas because we're afraid people are gonna make a mistake. Okay, there's a Ram. Okay, let's now. The question is: this is the big question in the world. Like, could you ever be Makel and say, let's just follow the Daraisa? If following the Chumrah of treating every woman like a Zava is going to impede upon someone's ability to have children, so would anyone ever say that just do the Daraisa? Just do the Daraisa. Chachamim putting in a chumra midrabanan to try to have people not be able to have children? That's the question. Because as a result of this, then many people would... So this is a big discussion in the poskim. Could we ever be lenient and let the woman go to the mikveh after... she'll bleed 5 days, she'll wait 2 more days, she did the deraisa, and then she'll go to the mikveh. So this is a big discussion in the poskim. Rav Abadi said to me once that he felt, Bizman Hazeh, you could have artificial insemination from the husband. In other words, see, in the old days, before they had that, the only way a woman would be pregnant is having relations with their husband. Then they become pregnant. But today, you can take the zera of the husband, remove it from the husband, and then put it in, you know, have a doctor just squirt it in. You know, and then, even though she's a nida, even though she didn't go to the mikveh, l'maisa b'pashtus, she's they're not having a tashmish. There was not having a child when your wife is a nida, you know, like a customs of a ben nida, a bas nida. So that's when they had relations be'isser. But here, there's no, they're not having relations. It's doing being done. In other words, the zera's is gotten from the husband. And then they, it's today this is called an IUI. IUI is when you take it's the artificial insemination from the husband's sperm. So once you have an IUI, so that's what everybody was saying, the necessity of trying to find leniencies to be makel, not to have to keep the extra chumrah of the Zayin Nekiyim, and is not as, you know, as necessary as it was when this was the only option of having children through physical relations. Because if you could just put it in, and you can, or you can put it in even when the woman is anida, right? Because you're not having tashmish with the woman, with the wife. So then he thought the whole concept. Now, some could argue with that and say, well, still, it could be a big expense. You know, usually when a couple has an infertility problems, so there are a lot of steps that are done. But one of the things they try is to do IUI. That maybe if they're having relations together and they're not being able to cause a pregnancy, so they would try to say that, okay, they shouldn't put, usually the zera is put in through Tashmi Samhita, but sometimes it could be that the doctor needs to, like, squirt it in, you know, and maybe that would be more penetrating and more able to fertilize the egg than if it's just done through relations. And so that's one way. And then if that doesn't work, as many times they try it, then they do what's called IVF. That IVF used to be called a test tube baby. I remember many years ago, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's son, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Shlita, he wrote a mimer or a mizrach called a Tinoka Mifchana, the test tube baby. Today it's called IVF. IVF means that you take the woman's egg, you remove it from her body, and you take the man's zera, and then you, outside the in a test tube, so to speak, you try to fertilize the egg with the zera, and they usually take a couple of sperms, so they could choose which is good, and then once they fertilize it, they put it back inside the woman, and then she carries the baby. So it's her egg, and her zera, and his zera, rather. And in other words, again, the easiest way to do it, obviously, is kedakar shaloylam, right? Is having relations, but sometimes that doesn't work. So then they do it through IUI. That's the man's zera, but not through Tashmish, but they're squirting it into the woman. And her, they don't take anything out of her body. And if that doesn't work, The next thing is they take her eggs out, and they take his zera out, and then they fertilize eggs, and if they have a good one that looks good, looks promising, they'll put that back in the woman, and she'll carry it for the next 9 months, and that's it. Then if that doesn't even work, then what's done is they have to check to see who's the problem with. Is it the problem with the woman's eggs, or is it the problem with the man's zera? And Rav Moshe permitted another, to use, if there's a problem with the man's zera, they go to a sperm bank, and they would get, this Rav Moshe permitted to go to a non-Jewish sperm bank, and get zera, and use, so the father won't be, the husband won't be the father really, but no one will know that. Or I've dealt with this in, with people, either getting zera from a sperm bank, or if a woman doesn't have eggs that are good, then we'll have to get an egg for a woman. Rav David Cohen, his shita, that's the shita that I hold, is to get a single Jewish woman who will want to give up eggs. I mean, you pay for it. I mean, just like everything in the world. So you get the egg, and from someone else. And then you fertilize it with the man's zera outside the body, and then you put it inside the mother, the wife, and she'll be carrying someone else's egg with her husband's zera. And I've dealt with that also. And this happened. I know a situation where there's a young lady, she was born that way. She had Turner syndrome. That means none of her eggs are going to be good. Imagine such a thing. Let me just tell you. This girl grew up knowing that she doesn't have any good eggs. And you know what? What would the person think like that? He says, "Who in the world will ever marry me?" Right? And I don't blame anyone who said, I'm not going to marry such a woman. I'm not going to marry such a woman who I know she doesn't have good eggs. So the only way we'll ever able to have children is getting an egg from someone else. And so most people would say, I'm not getting involved in this. Right? That's what most people would say. So, but I had a situation where this fella, met this young lady, and he liked her, obviously, and then she told him about the situation, and he still was willing to marry her. See, Rav David Cohen said to me once, he said, why did he marry her? Why did he marry her? So that's not a kasha. First of all, it's achar ha'maisa. He married her. He liked her. He married her. So the question is, Rav David Cohen said, halachically, did he have a right to do so? So he thought, chatchili, you shouldn't marry someone but he didn't. It's good. This Talmud didn't ask me the shayla whether he could marry her the chatchila. He ended up asking someone else, and that person said he could. So good. So I got involved just after it was given that they were getting engaged and getting married. And Baruch Hashem, they have children. Where someone else once came to me and said, they're happily married, and he found out that his zera is not good. And this, you see, in her case, at least she would know. She knew from childhood, the parents knew, that the eggs are no good. But when it's with the man, you're not going to know. So you could have a very happy marriage, husband and wife. They loved each other, and then one day he finds out that his zera can't impregnate a woman to have a child. And then they went to a sperm bank, and they got a sperm, and Baruch Hashem, they were able to have a child. One second. And when they go to the sperm bank, also, you should know, they look at the features. Because they don't want to have that all of a sudden they can have a child that looks nowhere not like the husband and nowhere like the wife. You know, and then people are going to be wondering what's going on here. So they try to get a zera from a non-Jewish man who has similar features to the husband. And Baruch Hashem, they have... Yeah. And if it wouldn't be for Moshe's coolers, people would have just stayed, you know, childless. And, you know, in certain circles, they will never allow such a thing. But, you know, because if you... Okay, there's a lot... I'm really jumping 10 steps ahead of where I should be. But, you know... But these were cases that, you know, I put my kishkas into, you know, to make sure these people have children. And now...
Could you tell us quickly what the yichas would be in each case?
Well, so this is a story. So, you see, so in the case of the... the man can't have children, and they go and they get a sperm from a non-Jew, right? So then, so the non-Jewish sperm is going to be put into the woman's body, and they're going to have a child, and the child will be Jewish. It's like having a bila with a goy. So it's related to the mother, won't be related obviously to the goyish father, and won't be related obviously to the husband of the woman. That's if you have to borrow an egg, that's more difficult. So again, some rabbanim are of the opinion you should get a goyisha egg, and then when you get a goyisha egg, then like Reb David Feinstein said to me once, that if the woman carrying the egg or the woman who is donating the egg is a goy, either one, you should have to do a geirus l'chumra. You have to do a geirus l'chumra. So that's why I avoid the geirus, and I make sure that we have a Jewish woman who is holding the egg, and a Jewish woman who is donating the egg. So both Jewish, and we don't do a geirus. And that's what we... Now, who's considered the mother al pi din is a whole discussion, whether it's the one who's. But I don't. I like that sheet that Reb David Cohen. Reb David Cohen told me once that he doesn't like a goyisha getting a goyisha egg, because if you use a goyisha egg and the husband's sperm, then he's not going to be related to the husband either. And Mimela, he says, what right did they have to be Motzi Zera? And he's not even Mekayim Peru Revu. But because you're not Mekayim Peru Revu, if you have a Goyisha egg and you're going to do a Geirus, he's not even related to you. So you're not even Mekayim Peru Revu. So what right does he have to be Motzi the Zera? So that's what I... In fact, it's interesting, and Reb David Cohen also wants that she should be single, so there shouldn't any be Shilas ever Mamzeris. So we get a single. It's an unbelievable story, I'll tell you. There are people who here that have organizations that help you find eggs and sperm. You know, there are people that, and they keep track of, you know, so you shouldn't end up marrying, you know, a relative, some, you know, was you know, usually you know who your wife is. So the mice, so Reb David Cohen wanted a single woman who's Jewish. So we found a woman. This woman found a woman who was married to a guy, who was willing, very nice lady. I spoke to her on the phone, and she was willing to give an egg, eggs, whatever, more than one eggs. And like Rabbi Dovid Cohen said to me, an intermarried woman is considered a single woman because al pi din she's not married. So we got the egg, and then listen to the story. Afterwards, she wanted to be married to a Jew, so they got divorced, and then she was gonna get married to a Jewish man. So we rushed to get more eggs before she gets married to her Jewish husband. Because once she's married to the Jewish husband, then we don't want to use her eggs anymore because it may be a child of Mamzeris. And because the first child they did, you know, she was married to the guy. The second time we did it, was before she married the Jew, because sometimes you want to get fresh eggs, you know, because the... And then, you know, another thing people do in this world... Unfortunately, you know, part of the shidduch crisis in this world is that women are having difficulty finding shidduchim. That's a whole big discussion. So a woman's getting older and she has difficulty finding shidduchim. So what some women do is they take eggs out and they freeze them. They take her eggs out and freeze them so they're frozen, so they can stay fresh. And this way, if unfortunately it takes her till she's in her 40s to get married, she'll still have eggs that are an eggs of a, not exactly, but you know, because it will be the freshness of an eggs of a 25-year-old or something like that. So that's what some people do when they see that they're not able to have.
Does the kula of Rav Moshe require that she be married, or let's say in that case of where she can't find a shidduch, can she?
Yeah, so this is another big thing in the community today. Single mothers. In other words, she can't find a shidduch, but she wants to have children. So she gets a zera, and she becomes pregnant, has a kid without a husband. Rav Dovid Cohen was very upset about this type of hanhaga. You know, but on the other hand, you know, you could say that a woman, you know, even though a woman doesn't have a chiyuv of puravu, but there's an emotional, you know, women have an emotional need to nurture children and things like that. So sometimes people do that. So Rav Dovid Cohen wasn't happy with this idea. But I thought that Rav Dovid Cohen wasn't happy with the idea of somebody getting married lechatchila to a woman that they'll know the only way she'll have children is if she gets eggs from somebody else. You know, she can carry a baby, but she'll get eggs from somebody else. Rabbi Shmuel First from Chicago, he told me once, I had another Talmud who was looking to marry someone who couldn't have, and he told me he thinks if he wants to marry her, he can marry her lechatchila, knowing that she won't have, her eggs are no good, and she'll have to get eggs from somebody else if he wants to marry her. Rav Dovid Cohen thought, that you should never do that lechatchila, but he thought you could do that. You could even do that lechatchila, and then in other circles, many other rabbanim, will not permit any of this stuff. They hold this is Maisa Eretz Mitzrayim. This is Bilbul Zera. You should never do such a thing. But, you know, in reality of life, when you see... I'll tell you a story once. Rabbi Moshe Tendler once said the following. He once came into yeshiva, and Dr. Belkin was the president of YU at the time. And he said to Dr. Belkin, you know, some of his kids, one kid was sick with this, one kid was sick with that, and he was complaining, you know, some of the kids, they're not well, they have the flu, they have a cold, this, that. So Rabbi Tendler said, oh, tzar gidol banim. So Dr. Belkin said, no. He says, the tzar is when you don't have children. This is gidol banim. But the tzar is people who don't have children. And that's the real tzar. So you see in life, you know, in a theoretical sense, you know, I would also say, what are you doing? This is Bilbul Zera. This is, you know, you know, all these things. But when you see what the agony that people go through who have trouble conceiving, then you see how significant Rav Moshe's tshuva was. And you see, this is probably one of the most courageous things that Rav Moshe Feinstein did in his life as a poysik, to permit this. Because he had a lot of heat. You know, the Satmar Rebbe sent a delegation to try to convince Rav Moshe to be chozer bo. And I'll tell you, and there were big rabbis. This is, if you want to see, it's recorded in a biography that was written about Rav Tuvia Goldstein. Rav Tuvia Goldstein was a Rav, he was from the Lower East Side, he was a Rebbe in RJJ, then he had his own yeshiva in Brooklyn, Ein Mekalacha, and he was Nifta, he was close to Rav Moshe. That deserves its own discussion. If you never heard of Rav Tuvia Goldstein, you should know of him. So, what was I saying? But what was I about to say?
The delegation.
Oh, yeah, the delegation, yeah. So he sent, the Satmar Rebbe sent Rav Moshe Bick and the Pupa Rav and the Rav Lebovich, those three Rabbanim, to try to convince Rav Moshe. But Rav Moshe wasn't Chozebro, but they made some pshara. But Rav David Feinstein doesn't permit these things necessarily. Like, I once went to Bonei Olam. I once went to Bonei Olam, a friend of mine who had this issue of not being able to have children. So you go to Bonei Olam, and Bonei Olam will help fund. You see, these things are very expensive. You know, all these things that I told you about, they're very expensive. So Bonei Olam funds things. They fund. My friend wanted to get a zera from like a sperm bank and have Bonei Olam fund it. And they said, if Rav David Feinstein will be maskim, then we'll give you the money, and if not, not. Even though Rav Moshe was maskim. But Rav David, the way I understood, was not necessarily maskim bizman hazeh. You know, and therefore they didn't give the money. In the end, this couple adopted a baby, and they had a ger katan. So I'm just giving you some reality of what goes on in the world of these issues, and of these things. And but Rav Moshe had the courage, you know, like it was. He needed somebody on the level of Rav Moshe to. You know, like some other things that people would do, people wouldn't be. Even this is not totally accepted. I mean, you know, a lot of people who are in communities that it's not accepted still do it. But you know, but they lemaisa, it's done. You know, because in certain communities, you know, it's a bigger stigma not to have children. I mean, no one wants not to have children. You know. But in certain communities, not, you know, more Hasidic communities, it's a much bigger stigma not to have children, not to have a lot of children, etc. So these are.
What about the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael? What's the minute?
Yeah. So, look, Machon. You know, there is an organization in Eretz Yisrael. I usually go visit. I'm very close with them. Called Machon Puah. Machon Puah is in Yerushalayim, and they're involved in helping people who can't have. And they go, you know, they speak with a lot of gedolim, you know, things that they do. So, you know, it's more like Rav Chaim Kanievsky is very against these things. And
even IVF?
I don't know about IVF, but you know, anything that's bilbul zera, anything that's gonna, in other words, this idea of using someone else's zera or someone else's egg, and something like that, you know. I was once, you know, not once, many times I go to Beagle Eisen to Sfarim shopping. So Beagle Eisen is a place where you don't only buy Sfarim, but you meet a lot of Rabbanim. It's a Sfarim store for like, you know, Lomdim. It's a Leibedik. So I went to a very Chashuva Mora Hara in the Hasidisha world. And I was telling him about this Talmud of mine who wants to have his wife get an egg from someone else. And like, you know, it was like, no way. It's not, you're not allowed to do that. You know, how could you have a child with some other woman that you're not married to? You know, but, you know, these were things that works, you know. But I tell you, it's, as I said, in a theoretical sense, I would say the same thing. But once you're dealing with real people and real situations, then
I'm just curious, is there any makar in Shas, such a shaman?
At best, you have in Shas of Nisabra, Nisabra Ba'amati. You know, there's someone's sperm is in the bathhouse, and then the woman takes a bath, and then the sperm gets in her. That's what the Gemara speaks about. But there are other sources in the Gemara that are not exactly like this, but this is like a huge thing. And Rabbi Tachman said this, supposedly Rabbi Moshe said, you know, you're going to see one day that this door needs this psak. And he, I'm kidding, this is, I think, one of the most significant things that he, you know, other psakim that he gave, you know, everything he gave is significant, but this was a changer, you know, of life for many people. You know, like all these families that I'm telling you would have not had, you know, especially, so you could say the case where the woman, you know, knew as at birth she can't have children, because she doesn't have good eggs is one thing, but this other case of they got married. How is the husband supposed to know that his zera? In other words, we don't have a concept that people get sperm analysis before they get married. Right? We don't find such a thing. We don't find that women are, you know, I don't know, maybe one day people will want that, but it's not. So here, a man and a woman, happily married, and they say they want to meet with me. Usually when people want to meet with me, it usually means they want a heter for birth control. So that's what I thought they were going to ask. But I said, no, they don't want a heter for birth control. They want to tell me that they can't have children. So first, the Machon Pur, Rabbi Gidon Weitzman, said to me, you should first get another second opinion. That's always you should do. You know, because who says that, you know, it can be mistakes. You know, doctors do make mistakes. And that's the thing. But
Rabbi Moshe was the pioneer. Before him, the Shaila didn't exist.
I think when Moshe was the, I would do have to do more research, but yeah.
You would probably know if there's a pre-existing shuba.
Yeah. I don't think anyone. I think Rabbi Moshe was the pioneer in this thing.
Rabbi, the Talmud Rebbe was against it on halachic grounds or on shkafic grounds.
It could be both. It could be both. I'll tell you.
The two of them never met face to face.
I don't know if they ever met face to face on this matter. If you let me turn off the recorder, I could say some more things. Let me turn off the